You're listening to the Road to Wisdom podcast, weaving stories told by wonderful minds about all things motherhood, health, intimacy, politics, nature, and everything in between.
Join us on an adventure discovering unique experiences that we can learn from to enhance the ways in which we live.
We are your hosts, Chloe
and Kashia. Welcome everyone to the Road to Wisdom podcast. Today we have Kim Anami in the studio. We have been trying to organize this interview for God knows how long. I am so excited to have you here, Kim. I found your work a little while ago. We were actually just talking about my birth stories recently, and it was when I was pregnant with my third that I stumbled across your work, and it just blew my mind open. And working in Taoism and Tantra, me and my husband's relationship just went well and truly beyond anything it had been before. So I'm really excited to have you here. Obviously, Chloe and I are like getting really deep into our pregnancies. We're very close to the birth space. So we'd love to speak to you today about, I guess, sexuality and how we can bring this into our birth space to make the births easier and, yeah, bring that, I guess, love and intention back into a birth space. Conquering any kind of fears and vulnerabilities through that strong connection with our partners and that strong connection with our own sexual essence. So,
my pleasure. Thanks for your patience in putting it all together with my flat earth wandering travels all over the place. I'm not saying globe trotting anymore. You have to change it. So yeah, it's a pleasure to be here, and I have a particular fondness for addressing all things pregnancy and birth from the more holistic, orgasmic perspective, because it really is the origin. It's the origin of life here, but the continuum of the sexual act, right? And the way that I look at it is that the sexual piece is really the missing piece, the cornerstone in the entire birth story these days that's been shunted off to the side, and people like to pretend has nothing to do with birth, and yet really is the key to having a pleasurable, pain-free, self-connected, self-actualized birth, and the key to keeping the connection strong with our partners, right? In my work, I could tell you very clearly that the place where most couples have a big chasm happen is after the birth of their children. And people like to chalk this up to, oh, you know, you're just not feeling very sexual. That's normal if you don't have sex for a few years. I saw a clip of somebody on Instagram, a quote sex doctor, who said, well, we know that parents usually don't start having sex again until the children are about age six. And I was like, oh my gosh, here's somebody who is perpetuating this mythology, right? And endorsing, affirming this mythology of don't worry about it. And the irony and the sadness of what this person's doing is that a parent's greatest secret weapon to becoming and being the most grounded, powerful, patient, loving parent and partner they can be is being sexual from beginning to end, which means from conception, having a really multi-orgasmic pregnancy, having an orgasmic birth, having a blissful, euphoric, transcendental postpartum full of lots of sexual contact. All of that is the secret to gliding through all of these really important parts of womanhood that most people think the opposite, right? That, you know, sex and birth have nothing to do with each other. Sex can be an incidental, irrelevant part of a relationship. Birth is meant to be painful. Postpartum, you're meant to get depressed. And you know what I mean? Like, you're meant not to have sex for 6 years. Like, that is the typical mindset, where I'm all about the opposite and explaining that the more sex you're having, the more close and connected you are through all of this, the more elevated all of these points on the spectrum will be.
Well, it's so interesting, because I feel like during that pregnancy stage is when a lot of women, like, I mean, I speak to my girlfriends at the time when we were pregnant, and we're like, oh my God, we're just so like turned on, like just can't get enough.
I think that's the norm. That's how it's meant to be. When a woman is like unblocked, that like I was like that voracious. I'm already, you might imagine, a high libido person. I feel like I'd love to be pregnant all the time because it's like, you know, skyrocketing off the charts. And the women I've known who are more in touch with their sexuality, who've done some work to clear blockages, they all say the same thing. But carry on. I'd love to hear more about your libidinous pregnancy.
Well, the point that I was trying to like bring up is that the modern kind of mainstream, I wouldn't say modern, but the mainstream kind of thoughts around sex and pregnancy is like, I actually read something the other day that you should avoid orgasming during birth because it can stimulate like labor. And so I feel like there's a lot of women out there who are like, oh, I'm too scared. Like I can't, you know, can't do that, or it shouldn't be, it's not a time. It's just not a time for sex. It's a time for the, you know, all of this other stuff going on. And like, if I have an orgasm, then I'm contracting and like, maybe that's dangerous. So there's like, we've got to the point where there's potentially fear around sex during pregnancy. And that's a damn shame because,
well, you think about the mythology of the whole Madonna whore story, right? Like from birth, we're taught, at least especially in the Western world, and I think there's corresponding mythology in other big religions, of the Madonna whore dichotomy, right? Woman's either a virgin, pure, or she's a slutty whore. Like there's not this happy medium ground for a woman to have a healthy, voracious, salacious sex drive and be really empowered as a sexual being. And so we're all imprinted with that dichotomy, right? From birth, it's in all of our literature and movies. And, you know, I like think about movies and TV shows where there's always a random hooker, almost everything, like in mainstream stuff, right? They've always got to just throw, it's like, why? Why? Because they're continually perpetuating this archetype, right? Of like the whore, which is divorced from the woman, right? The regular woman. So I think this is where it becomes really important to do what I call like sexual feng shui or sexual shadow work, which is to go in and examine a lot of the beliefs and ideas that we have taken in that have largely been imprinted upon us from our family of origin, our upbringing, the culture at large, and perhaps even our own traumatic experiences. And this is the most important time to be rolling up our sleeves and doing this deep inner work is, you know, through preconception, conception, and even pregnancy, to be working really hard to clear all of this space, right? So that when it comes time for the birth, the energetics within ourselves, our own relationship to our sexuality, our vagina, our body is clean and clear. The relationship to our partner is clean and clear because they're a huge part of this dynamic, right? And I think also in Western culture, we have this institutionalized cuckold system where we send women off to the hospital to spread their legs and get finger fucked by everybody in the hospital, especially a lot of male OBGYNs, and to really imprint upon them this power ritual, like you don't have the power, somebody else has the power, this dude has the power. Mm-hmm. And so we're constantly imprinting that on pregnant women. So when it comes time to birth, they're totally happy to go in and sacrifice themselves and their bodies and have sexual contact with another man. And I think this unspoken, even unable to articulate resentment builds within a couple, especially if a couple has a traumatic birth, which I don't know, maybe your community is different because you're already really focused on more holistic pregnancy and birth. But some women have come out of that system, perhaps entering your community or, you know, aren't maybe deeply in it, and they end up in the hospital because they think they were just one of those women who needed to go there. You know, they were the exception to the rule, because everyone wants to be the exception, not part of the 33% C-sections that just seem to happen these days. And that then this massive chasm develops between the husband and the wife because the wife feels on such a deep primal level that he wasn't there for her. You know, he didn't protect her from this savagery, this butchery, this surgery, this violation to her sexuality. And he really, like a fucking cuckold, just sat there and let it happen, right? Even if we can rationalize, well, the baby's life was in danger, that's what they tell us. You know, like all these narratives that get perpetuated, the bottom line is like your husband wasn't there for you or partner or whatever, right? They let this happen. But that's where we have to wind back the clock and go back to the beginning through conception and pregnancy and the birth to create this scenario where the couple is not just have a natural pregnancy, but the birth is so powerful and bonding that it brings them closer together. So that's what's meant to happen. Birth is meant to be such an incredible experience that the couple is more in touch with each other. Sexually, they've bonded even stronger because it's been this orgasmic experience, or at least very pleasurable experience. And they come through it with such a bond that carries them through parenthood. But most people stumble out of their birth experience traumatized. That chasm happens, especially if it's been a hospital birth and this cuckold situation happens. And the woman and the man then have this massive gap in the relationship that they can't even put words to, because partly nobody's allowing them to, right? Like, first of all, they're going to get patted on the head and they're there, little girl, don't you worry about it. These things happen. At least you have a healthy baby and you're healthy, and you might be ripped to shreds and your baby now has autism because of all the drugs and interventions that they did, but you're relatively healthy, you know. And then you're trying to find, and that's where, to me, like, postpartum depression is really PTSD from, you know, traumatic birth experiences. And so they're trying to put all those pieces together, but unless they come across communities like these, they have no language and no support to be able to do that, because everyone else is going to reinforce it's normal to have postpartum depression, it's normal not to have sex for 6 years, right? All of these stories, and no one's going to be able to help them until or if they ever make their way into a more awoken space.
And I mean, that goes into parenting as well, where it's like, I think one of the highest divorce rates happens within the first 2 years of a child's life. And, you know, we're normalizing this and like, oh yeah, no, but it's supposed to be hard. And yeah, absolutely, it's meant to have its challenges, but, you know, challenges that come off the back of that traumatic situation where it's like, you know, and I feel for men in that position as well, like, you know, they're kind of stunned mullets if you haven't done any research. Yeah, but they're pushed to the side. They're told they don't know what they're doing. They need to stand back. They need to let the professionals do their work. And like, these men are watching this trauma happen to their women.
Their women get gang raped in front of their eyes.
And they're taking that exactly. And they're being told that they can't do anything about it because it's good for her. The safety of the woman and the baby.
Good for her to get gang raped. You just watch, take some photos maybe.
Exactly. And it's like, I mean, we've spoken about this in past conversations where it's like, well, you know, men often don't feel a connection to their baby for, you know, up until a year or so, because they're dealing with their own trauma from the birth. They've, you know, this baby's come through. There's no oxytocin flying around in the room. It's literally just, you guys survived. Great. Good for you. And then you've got to go into a parenting situation like that, opposed to what birth can look like. And if your relationship, I mean, if your relationship, your sex, your intimacy, your connection is so strong, no man is going to watch that happen to their woman. Like, there would be intervention. Chances are you would be questioning whether you need to go into a hospital or not, because you as the man would feel so confident in your woman's choices to birth. And if you're, you know, if you know that what helps the baby go in helps the baby come out, well, all those things would start ruminating and building in your mind. So yeah, it's such a, and then going into parenting after that kind of experience is completely different. Yes, it's hard, but you'll be together and going through those tough times rather than resenting each other and having that massive chasm between you and having to navigate it.
Yeah, and I think a really big reframe that I try to make for people is that, you know, when the going gets tough, I think the instinct, which is a mutated one, is for people to go inward and to separate and become more independent. So they become as though they're driving in two parallel lanes down the motorway rather than driving in the same car, right? And kissing and making out along the way, right? So when is that really, when it's kind of like that idea when things are really getting tough in your life and stressful and you're really busy and you're like, well, I don't have any time to meditate. It's like, no, actually, this is when it's most important to meditate because you're going to go in and recharge and refuel yourself. You're going to recalibrate your brain and your creativity. So you come out of that 20-minute meditation with all kinds of energy and fresh ideas, and you're way more efficient and creative than you were if you didn't do it. The exact same analogy applies to sex. It's, oh, we're so busy, we don't have time, you know, we have all these other things to do. Actually, no, you are going to bend time and space if you prioritize your intimate connection and you have ideally long, I'm really into the extended tantric style sex date, but even shorter, high quality connections with each other where it's like you're literally going in to plug in and recharge and collect energy, harvest energy from your intimate sexual connection with each other. I always say, you know, sexual energy is life force energy. It's the energy that creates new life. And if we're not creating babies with it, which every time we have sex, we're obviously not always creating a baby with it, we can learn to consciously tap into and harvest that energy, recirculate it, exchange it with each other, nourish each other, heal and rejuvenate each other with it, and then channel that out into every part of our lives. And so that really is the essence of all the teachings in my work, is showing people how to do that and why to do it, because that's a huge piece that people get swayed, I think, with that collective cultural unconsciousness and ignorance about all things sexual, right? Where they tell themselves that story instead, like, we don't have time for that. You know, we're busy, we're new parents. Like, who has time for that? We're tired. Okay, it's like, if you're tired, the place you're going to get energy is from each other's genitals. So dive in, bottoms up, kids, and go and drink yourself silly, right? That is where you're going to collect that high quality, potent energy that's going to turn you into a superpower couple. That's what I call it. Right. But that's the secret, is you get it from each other when you're in a very close, intimate, connected space. And the birth, its true role is to reinforce that in a couple. It's to elevate them and take them to an even higher state in their connection and relationship. And if a couple doesn't make it through that portal, through that quest, through that test, is really what it is, then they've got some work to do, some healing and reparation to do. And maybe they'll be able to do it again and get it right. You know, it's all lessons and information. We're all coming out of, you know, such a massive, so many spells from the pharmakia, raka kaka blaka, I call it, medical system that we're breaking out of, you know, each at our own pace. And we know things when we know them. So it's never, even though I might sound sometimes harsh in the statements I make, they're never leveled at people themselves. They're leveled with a lot of shaming and blaming at the people enforcing them and perpetuating them, but not for the people who have necessarily like been a victim of them and are maybe waking up to that, right? But like when we know it, then it's our time to act on it and know it. And I was talking about this in my vaginal kung fu salon this week. It's like, you know, instead of beating yourself up for I made this mistake and this happened to me, like you pick yourself up and you dust yourself off, and then you can pay it forward with your knowledge now. So maybe you're a woman who's had 3 children and they were all hospital births and a bit of a cataclysm. And now you're learning all this stuff. And like, oh my God, if only, yeah, okay, great. But now you can be a messenger to pay that forward to everyone you know, to your daughters and your son's girlfriends and your nieces and nephews and your friends. Like you can, that's how you heal. Right? That's how you heal from the past. If you don't, are not going to have the opportunity to redo it, then, or there's some damage that's already been done, you heal and pay it forward by now being a messenger of the truth yourself, right? Like we think of so many parents of vaccine injured children who are often the largest advocates of education in this realm because they've learned the hard way. Right. And the way that they're now restoring themselves and healing that karma is to be vocal advocates and truth tellers, and often fearless ones, because frankly, they've lost all there is to lose. Right. They have nothing left to lose. Right. So now they're brave and courageous about speaking the truth.
I mean, this is like also just paradigm shifting if you really consider it, because it's obviously 100% better for society. I mean, depending on which lens you're looking at it, but I imagine and I know for sure that it's way more beneficial for families to like stay together and way more better for them if families are broken up. And I kind of feel like once you enter parenthood, it's so normal for mums to just be like turned off, busy, sleep deprived, like so uncared for, unsupported, unfucked, like all the things you can think of. And so I always think how fascinating it must be would be if we were all these like highly sexual beings just being like well fed and well fucked, as you say. And I kind of just want to speak to that a little bit, like the well fed and well fucked woman and what she's capable of.
Right. So my view is that when people are really in tune with their sexual energy and owning and inhabiting it, they're operating from that place of what I said, like instead of just dumping their sexual energy out into the ethers or being fully disconnected from it, they own it, they inhabit it. And I created this whole definition and meme of a well-fucked woman to mean that it's somebody who really is owning that energy within themselves, and the way that we walk and we talk and we engage in the world, that energy gets infused into everything we do. Then a woman at that stage of her life has a certain kind of radiance and confidence and je ne sais quoi, right? This palpable attractiveness and magnetism that brings people into her sphere. And she's wearing this magnificent life force energy that's so charismatic and radiant that it draws people to her. But it's also like this force field of protection, because what I say happens when women, especially women, reach men, this happens too as well, but we'll talk about women for now. Like this reach, one of the hallmarks I know when women truly have made it to that place is they have the don't give a fuck energy. Like they don't give a fuck about other people's opinions, about what they do, what they say, what they wear, how they operate in the world. And it's not that they're trying not to give a fuck. They just don't give a fuck, right? Things are going over their head, or there's, like I said, this force field where things just ping off of them. And you're much more in alignment with your own truth and your own values, and you speak them and you take actions that are in alignment with those things spontaneously, right? And so one of the examples I'll give is where somebody comes into my work and they're just learning to get into their sexual energy and sexual selves. And let's say as a lifelong expression of not being connected to that, they're working in some kind of like 9-to-5 pay the bill sort of job, right? Because your sexual energy is your life force, creative energy. It's connected to your dharma, how you express and show up in the world and the way you give your gifts to your work, to the world. So people will start to really get in touch with their sexual energy. They're owning it much more, and they start making choices that are more in alignment with that truth. So that might be that certain people fall out of their lives, they gravitate towards other people. Their jobs, if they're not an expression of the truth of who they are, they will naturally just kind of gravitate out of them and into something that is. And it's not because we're sitting there doing career coaching and I'm saying, well, if you these personality types, those maybe you should do this. My advice is go fuck yourself, because if you're fucking yourself on a regular basis, that energy will become so potent that it will become like its own compass. It will guide you into the choices, into the opportunities that are most aligned with your highest self-expression. So that is the power of being a well-fucked woman. And all of that extends into men as well. As being a well-fucked person is that you actually end up as a more truthfully expressed person, because your sexual energy is the essence of who you are, right? That is your genetic blueprint, the coding of your essence. And the more that you're embodying that, everything else in your life takes on a more truthful, dharma-oriented inner compass guiding light, because you're now living from that place. You're more connected to it. So that's even, and okay, sure, you're having more orgasms and better sex, but like, that's what, like, the definition of being well fucked goes much deeper than that, right? Like all the things I said before about plugging into each other and using sex, which you could also do as a single person, but, you know, even stronger as a couple, you're getting all that. But the end result that shows up in your day-to-day life are all these things that I just described, because it's not just about, yeah, we have a better sex life. Cool. Right? Like, yeah, okay. Yeah. But like so many other things blossom out of that.
Yeah. And I've heard you say it before where you've spoken to things like, you know, if you're a woman and you want to have more sex with your partner and you're like, well, I need lube or coconut oil in this area, you know, that's actually bypassing something you need to look at, essentially. Like if you're not wet down there and you're not being turned on and you're bypassing something like that, like, yeah, starting before even just we're well fucked, we're, you know, having more sex, it's like going to this place where actually your body's functioning at a level where you can have more sex. Like you're tapped into it where you don't need assistance from toys or lubrications or anything like that. Like I guess your body's singing on all capacities. So I'd love to go into that a little bit because we do talk about, you know, intuition a lot here and being able to trust your intuition and using that as guidance, especially, you know, pregnancy, birth, that kind of thing. And, you know, if your health is in the right place, well, then you can start leaning in on that. But I do know, like, I have, you know, lots of friends and I've had conversations with people who are like, well, I just don't really feel like sex. And they're like, and I just need to go and have more sex. So I guess if we could talk to that a little bit, like the initiation, because I know that you go into that.
That's what I was thinking too. Like if you just, what, as a woman who just is the first one to make the move, like, what does it look like? Because let's just say the partner's in the same position and they're just, you kind of, there's like this massive disconnection and everyone's just like living with it. I kind of feel like, yeah, how do you just enter that space? What does it look like?
Right. Well, what I talked about earlier, this idea of sexual feng shui and clearing blockages, like if there's a buildup of stuff and a buildup of unconsciousness around all things sexual, which I would say applies to most people, if they haven't actually consciously decided, let's look at our sex life. If we're not feeling drawn to each other and attracted to each other, things have come to a standstill. What's going on? And generally what's happened is there's been a buildup of unresolved issues, right? Like I'll give the example of, let's say you and your partner have an argument at breakfast time. And then you're like, okay, it's nighttime. We ought to have sex. And you go to have sex. You haven't really resolved the issue that happened earlier. Maybe he's not very hard. She's not very wet. Like instead of slathering on the lube or like popping a Viagra, which would be, you know, we seem to think that like lube is still somehow a non like medical intervention, but I would say that it is, even though we can say, we'll use coconut oil. Like, no, it's still, it's overriding the body for one, right? We're saying, body, you know nothing, you're dumb. We're going to slather this lube on. We're going to re-traumatize your vagina, which is clearly saying, I don't want to have sex right now, which is either the woman isn't physically turned on enough or she's emotionally got some kind of blockage and her vagina is speaking that. So instead of listening to that, we're ignoring it, perpetuating the problem by forcing the vagina to now have sex with the coconut oil. It's holistic, so we'll do it that way. You know, slathering that on, like, lube it the girl's best friend. Oh my God, lube it amazing. Like, no, it's your worst enemy, actually, because you're trying to deny the truth of your body's messages and voice. So to back that up, let's say the couple then goes back to talk about, okay, let's solve the issue that happened at breakfast time first, right? Let's clear that space. And then often after these space clearing conversations, a couple finds that they can't keep their hands off each other because truth is one of the biggest aphrodisiacs. You know, a huge part of my work is the concept of radical honesty. So rather than the culturally sanctioned idea of don't ask, don't tell, or tell white lies, it's like, no, we get everything out on the table and we talk about it. And look, if you've got a buildup of things, clearing one little breakfast time argument may not even make a dent in the pile, right? And this is where I'll have couples go back. And again, this is a huge part of my work, to the beginning. And like, what are the things over the years that we have held on to and we haven't cleared? And some of those things could even be traumatic births. right? Like that's a huge block that will mm-hmm. stay within the whole energetic field of a couple. It could be someone's own individual sexual trauma and abuse from the past. It could be somebody else's religious beliefs that they've grown up with and never really examined to see how are those operating in my life and in our relationship right now. So it's a conscious examination of all of the unconscious programming and unresolved issues that we have taken on. That is the big, you know, alchemical container of work that couples need to dive into. And when they do that and they really get into it, that's when they start to feel then, ooh, the flutters of attraction magically come back because now they've literally cleared the space in the room, this energetic field between them, and now they want to be intimate again. So that's the first step. It's not about, like, we could band-aid it and like, well, if I wear lingerie and go into the, like, that's not a solution, right? That's sort of like a temporary diversion. Mm-hmm. The longer term issue, and this is why I get permanent healing and results in my work, is going back to do the actual larger inner work. We want to call it shadow work, and I call it sexual feng shui, you know, of that pile up of stuff that living in the kind of sexually repressed climate and censored climate that we do in the world today, we all have vestiges of that. Some people have massive amounts of it. Some people have small amounts of it. None of us get through living and growing up in this culture without some degree of it. We all have work to do. And when we do that work and we see this, like in my Orgasmic Enlightenment podcast, I have a segment called Well Fucked All Stars, where we interview singles and couples who've gone through the process, and they'll be, you know, people who say never had an orgasm before, and now they're having like 60 orgasms in a row, and they talk about the process, and always a part of that process is this deeper inner healing and clearing work, right? It's not like, well, I tried this masturbation technique and this sexual position. Like mechanics is 10% of the equation, you know, 10%, 90% is all of this other inner work, clearing these blockages, shining the lens of illumination on our dark shadow places, and figuring out, you know, what is the truth and the essence of our sexual natures. And I'm in my work, I talk about the Anami guarantee. And the Anami guarantee is that everyone can. Every woman is multi-orgasmic, can have G-spot, cervical, squirting ejaculation that hits the ceiling. Every woman has a voracious libido. Every woman can have an orgasmic birth. Every man can learn how to have sex for 8 hours straight. Every man can separate orgasm from ejaculation and be multi-orgasmic. Every single person can. I guarantee that. And if you haven't gotten there yet, it's because of this pileup of blockages that is in the way to your true potential. And if you get in there and you clear that space, you too can be a well-fucked all-star, where you have these sort of magical reality-bending stories to share of being in a particular place to now where you are that people can barely believe, which is why we interview them, because they're so radical, quantum healing type stories. And look, your sexual energy is the most healing force we have access to, which is why sex is so centered, right? Heal thyself. The best place you can get the healing energy is at your genitals, which is why for some people, it could feel like your genitals are a million miles away. Like the programming has been so successful, right? The censorship and the lies and the misinformation around sex has been so successful that the most powerful healing energy we have access to as humans, for many people, they can't even touch themselves, can't even put their hands in their own vaginas because they've been so brainwashed and programmed by all of the work that's been deliberately done to separate people from the power that is literally at their fingertips.
Yeah, it's so interesting that you say that too, because when you delve into, and we do quite a bit, like ancient civilizations, like there is evidence that they used their sexual energy as healing tools as well, and as a tool to, you know, be taken to astral levels and seek guidance from whatever, but it was used as like this incredible power. And yeah, in modern society now, it's just procreation, if that, like...
Oh, it's not even going to be that soon, right? It's already into test tube, transhumanism, fakey babies, right? Like they're already on the way to that. sterilization shots. I mean,
One thing I do want to like touch on is when you say like you could be a well-fucked all-star, is that like in my head I'm like, okay, these people are just having sex like all day every day, and I'm like, that just is like great, love that. But also, have we always been, you know, people who humans who have just constantly needed that? Or is it kind of like we're bored out there in our modern worlds and we need this to kind of like fuel us and kind of carry us on? Or like, do you know what I'm saying?
Not exactly, no.
It's my three brain cells that I've got left. I just mean like, what is it like, do you mean that people should be just having sex like really often to like create this sexual energy? Like as women, like we should always be like having a lot of sex, or is it kind of just like great sex?
Both.
When you're having sex and those intimate moments with your partner and like, just, yeah.
I'd say both, right? Like if I had to put an amount on it, you know, I would say the minimum to sustain that sexual connection is like minimum 3 to 4 times a week, but even daily. And if you're operating, I talk about like the sexual simmer, right? And if you think about, we have ice and we have boiling water. And as a couple, I suggest and encourage that you're always hovering at a simmer. Like you're always operating at like an 8 out of 10, where there's always this palpable feeling of an electrical sexual charge between you. You're never dropping down to a 0. And if you're hovering at an 8, you can make out in the hallway, you know, like between children's rooms for like a couple of minutes before reading a bedtime story, charge yourself up, go in, you know what I mean? Like all flushed up with some energy, read the story, go make breakfast, have a like, you know, 20 minute morning sex before the kids get up, and then go and boom, you're ready for your day. And I'm definitely all about longer encounters, but the more that you're living in that simmer supercharge, even brief contact with each other will help rev that energy up and keep that connection going, right? Like if we talk about this as being, you know, the recharge place, that even coming together briefly will give you that hit and that energetic hit. If we look at sexual energy divorced from, which obviously you guys have because you're referencing these ancient cultures, but divorced from any kind of moral, societal projections that have been put on top of it, and look at it solely as an energy source, like chi in the body, right? And we know that as soon as we give it some attention, we're revving up that chi. We have that chi to utilize within ourselves, our bodies, and our lives, right? That's kind of a better framework to think about the frequent sex rather than any other mental stereotype ideas we might think about, like, having, what does that mean to have lots of sex all the time? And is that like a diversion or an addiction or what? Like, it's none of that. It's an energy source. It's where we go to fuel up and connect with ourselves and each other. And like I said, if we're operating in more of that simmer level, it doesn't have to take. I really do support couples having at least one weekly 3-hour sex date, which is a longer period of time when you can really open up and surrender and dive very deeply into each other in that space. But if you are maintaining these practices, like I call it having a clean as you go policy in terms of clearing that glass between you, having these more honest, open conversations so that you don't have a pileup of additional issues, you'll be living in that simmer where you can dance with each other and tune into that energy. And it's not like starting from ice, trying to melt the ice, bring the ice up to a, you know, a boil, right? Like you don't have to put in all that work every time if you're already putting in the ongoing energetic work to stay there and to live there. And I believe that all couples can. That is where we ought to live and where everyone can live. That's not just the domain of certain people and certain higher libido people. Like I said, in the Anami Guarantee, everyone has a high libido. Everyone is a salacious sexual being. And if they aren't tuned into that, it's because something is obscuring that right now.
I love that. That's actually something that we did speak with Lucy Lampy about, because it's like, I'm not there now. I will admit I'm definitely not there now, but me and Toga have been in that like simmer phase. And it was like when it started when I was pregnant with my third, Rue, and then after, like up until I think I fell pregnant with my fourth, we were there, and it's such a nice place to be in, because your relationship flow, like everything just feels like it's flowing really easily, and things that would otherwise make you upset or derail you, like they're not really issues. It's like I can handle anything, and I can, like, I don't know, you just feel more vivacious with life in general, like, and yeah. Everything looks better and feels better, and your friends are more attractive, and it smells and food tastes better. Like it's a really nice place to be in, and the world would be a better place if everyone was there all the time. So I think Tucker and I are gonna jump into your course pretty much after this chat, Kim, because I miss it. But we've got some time before this baby comes. between recording and the baby comes, there's a little bit of time we might be able to retune our relationship.
It's great that you've experienced it and you felt it and you know what that is. And then you have a barometer for what it feels like to be living from that place. And then when you get off center, so this mm-hmm. is what some of our, say, all-star couples would say. Like sometimes they'll say, you know, we didn't have sex for a couple of days. We started to get a bit irritable with each other because they've been living from that higher level place for a while. They're established there. And if they fall off, they feel it right away. They're like, yeah, I snapped at them this morning. Like, oh, we realized we didn't have sex for 2 days. And that might seem like only 2 days. But if we think, like the Taoists talk about the morning and evening prayer, making love in the morning as a way to start the day and recalibrate and center and plug into that energy source, like food and nourishment. And then at the end of the day, as a bookend and a prelude going into the dream state, you know, you mentioned like astral world, like going into another dimension of consciousness, that's a great way to connect and ground each other that way. So if we took that as, you know, the the model, then twice a day is, you know, what they would recommend. And I'm not saying that needs to be the rule of genitals, but I think it's when our lives tell us, when we then know that we're operating, we get more irritable, we have less patience, we have less creativity, life feels like more of a slog, then it's like, okay, great. So where can I get that energy from? Oh yeah, my genitals and my partner, like that's where we go to fuel up, right? And like, that's what I mean, separating out, which can be a challenge for some, but the other moral attachments to all these things and just looking at it as chi and an energy source and what we were meant to be using as fuel in our lives and healing power in our lives. And that's the biggest lie, you know, the biggest censorship gag that's happened is by telling people otherwise and having them believe otherwise and fearing their own sexual energy and power, right? Because like I say, it really is the biggest psyop there is, the sexual psyop.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that extends into long life. I was actually just talking to my grandma recently, and she's a great role model when it comes to relationships because she's just gone into her 80s and is one of the most, like, she's very young at heart. She's very capable. She'll look after my kids, so her grandchildren, for us. And she owes it all to the fact that she still has a really healthy sex life my grandpa. So she's like, yeah, she's like in her 80s and she's like, I feel great. And we've always had a great relationship, and this is what keeps me young, like continuing a great sexual relationship. And
I love that, Grandma. She talks about that and she's open and she sees the connection and she's sharing it with her grandkids and beyond. That's incredible.
And I did get her permission to be able to say this, everyone on the podcast, just in case. But no, she's fantastic, and she is just such a youthful human, and so is my grandpa. Like, for, you know, I see other people their age and they're crippled and not doing so well, and you know, my grandparents are traveling the world. I mean, they just went on a cruise through the Middle East during a wartime, and it was one of the most exciting, fun things I've done in a really long time, you know. So I'm like, I see the proof in the pudding there, and I'm like, this is what we all need. Like, we all need to be growing into these relationships where, you know, our sexuality doesn't die at any age. It's a continuum and just constantly bringing us pleasure and joy. So no, I'm a big fan.
It is fascinating to zoom out, isn't it? And kind of like look at what's going on out there and be like, women are like incredibly infertile these days, and that's when they're getting worse. And like the divorce rate is still 50 something. Like, is it more than 50? I think it's like 50.
It's 50. 50.
Is it 50 still? And like, there's a lot of miserable elderly people out there. And yeah, I guess it's not hard to be like, maybe if they were just eating some good food and having some good sex, the world would be very different. But yeah, it's really fascinating that something like just connecting and
I mean, that whole the aging thing, I think, is huge, right? The idea of being like well fucked into your 70s, 80s, 90s and beyond, and that it's all possible. And that was something, you know, when you'd asked me that lube question earlier, and part of the Anami guarantee is like any age and any stage. Like, there aren't any valid excuses, right? Oh, but I'm pregnant, or oh, I just had a baby, or oh, I'm in menopause. No, no, no. We've had gushing women at every age and stage, right? In their 80s, no hormones, like hormone free, menopause and beyond. And same thing with like postpartum, that there's no exception to the Anami guarantee. Like, you're not the special one. Oh, I have this condition, so I blah, blah. No, no. You're still included in the guarantee. You just have to figure out there's always a solution. It's just about finding it, and pretty much always a holistic solution.
And that's fantastic, because we're eliminating the victimhood mentality there. Like, you can take control of that. And actually, no, I could derail this conversation and go in so many directions once we get into victimhood. But I guess keeping it where we are, like, you know, as you mentioned, Chloe, like infertility rates and fertility in general, like women knowing their fertility and therefore being able to choose when and where they have babies, something that I need to work on. But yeah, it's like, it's an empowering thing once you're tapped into that, that you don't need to rely on obstetrics or the medical system or whatever to tell you what your body's doing, when it's doing it. You know, you fall pregnant when you want, you have your baby when and where you want, with whom you want in the room. And then going into menopause, I don't know if this feeds into your work, Kim, but I'm guessing it brings ease into that, because I look at my grandma and she didn't really have all that many symptoms in menopause. She had 6 very straightforward births. Like, powerhouse. The woman's a, you know.
I've often wondered that as well.
So,
like, how we birth and how we are living, because I've often heard also that menopause is like a Western world problem, and you know, like, obviously women are like, you know, doing things that we don't naturally do and quite masculine and quite out of our feminine essence or way of living and being, and now we're like getting these really intense symptoms, or even just being infertile to begin with, and then reaching menopause and it just being like a total shit show and just horrible existence to live through. So yeah, having that, I feel like this type of work is kind of like the pillar of being connected to yourself and being able to have these like really empowering experiences kind of going forward. But do you feel like that? Like, the menopause is like a Western.
Oh yeah, menopausal women are the allopathic cash cow. And in my work, you know, if women are well fucked and they go through menopause, it's a blip on the radar, not even a blip on the radar. It's seamless. They simply don't have periods anymore. That's it. Nothing else, right? Mm-hmm. They're still lubricating. Mm-hmm. They're still gushing. Mm-hmm. They're still multi-orgasmic. But the women who aren't well fucked going into menopause, yes, they'll be the ones who have issues. But even in my work, women who have gone through menopause and they've been struggling and having all these issues, when they become well fucked, they can transition out of these symptoms, right? And so by no means is it a mandatory rite of passage, right? Like, and I know I've always been saying that that menopause is a manufactured condition. And I actually found the guy who manufactured it. There was a guy in the 1960s, an American, of course, like doctor, who was propped up by pharma companies to put out this whole mythology that menopause was a disease that all women clearly were destined to get. And the only solution was to be on hormones, HRT. And so that was the onset of the estrogen candy popping pills, you know, whole situation. And then they created all these false studies, bogus studies, as they do, to prop up, you know, why women should take all these pills. And then I think it was like within 20 or 30 years, like every single thing that they touted as a benefit from being on HRT was proven wrong, right? Because they can just make up studies and they, you know, doctors bend over, you shove a bunch of cash up their ass, you know, you go to the whorehouse, the WHORE whorehouse, buy yourself a few scientists, you know, and get them to write your studies for you, right? Which is what they've been doing all along and continue to do. So that means fucking nothing. So no, I don't buy into that at all. And there's cultures all over the world. They don't even have a word for menopause because it's not even a thing, right? It's not a condition. It's not a stage of life. It will become one if women have not looked after themselves over the years. And then of course they're in the allopathic net of being caught, right? Like I've been looking at some, people send me reels on social media of examples of health professionals, right? Especially, like I said, this menopausal cash cow area. And they're like, you know, every single woman from age 45 to the rest of their life needs to be on hormones. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, how bad are you at your job, right? Like, there, and even women who, like, doctors who purport to have a more natural view on things, like even naturopaths, right, and integrative doctors and stuff, where they're all about the hormones, right, all about it. And I don't buy into that at all. I don't think that's necessary. Women, it's like there might be a reconfiguration that needs to happen within the system. Like I said, all of this block clearing and inner healing work that needs to take place. Our bodies are communicating with us. If our bodies break down, if we have difficult periods, if we have difficult PMS, if our body's not lubricating, if we have challenging menopause, the body's like, hold up, look at me, help me, heal me. And if we do those things and we get in there and do that inner work, all of these conditions can shift and be transformed and become portals of power, right? And I don't know if you guys, you probably have talked about this on your podcast, but, you know, menstruation is, again, you know, we're all brainwashed to look at menstruation as the curse, this painful, torturous time of the month that whatever the Bible, like Eve was a hoe, so women are going to get punished forever and ever for being so slutty, you know, difficult, painful birth and painful periods. And then I guess painful menopause is a part of that punishment for slutty Eve. However they fucking talk about it, I don't even know, right? But so you know, all these things can be healed and transformed. And menopause can actually be this time when women collect all of this sexual creative energy and use it as a higher spiritual portal in themselves, because they aren't using all of this menstrual energy all the time to prepare for new life. Right now that energy is being conserved, and if we use it wisely, we can use it as a springboard to higher states of consciousness, where menopause, you know, the kind of old, the crone is such an awful word, I don't like using it because it sort of signifies like old and decrepit. So what was like a better, like wise woman, you know, wiser elder woman kind of mythology and like you know, medicine woman idea, right? Like shaman woman, where we have these mini shaman experiences whenever we have our periods and whenever we go through birth, whenever that cervical portal gate to other dimensions opens, we have access to that state of consciousness. But the idea, even in Taoist literature, is that we have access to it more frequently and even constantly when we've passed that transition and now we're in menopause, right? So these are all these different ways of looking at it that are in complete opposition to the Western lens of these being And again, you think like, well, why have they done that? Why have they cast this blanket of bullshit and victimhood and pain over these sacred portals and moments and opportunities for women that are really the essence of womanhood? The true power of being a woman lies in all of these experiences and portals that we have access to, that we're continually being told that these aren't portals or energy centers. They are depths of despair, you know, that we're all unfortunately just victims of biology, and only drugs will save us, you know, only hormones will save us. If we're on hormones from age 14 for acne until the age of 85, just for being a woman, like, you have to wonder, right? Like, sometimes the intelligence of the marketing behind all these things, right? That, like, that people think of these concepts and then other people eat them up, that they have so little trust and even animosity towards their own bodies and the experience of being human that they think humans certainly could never survive without gulping down pills every day. Or having their babies cut out of them. Like, a woman could never possibly birth a baby. Yeah. Like, it has to get cut out of her, you know, that we've bought into these things is also quite astonishing.
Yeah. I really like the term that some people use, or I think we may have recently chatted about this in our podcast, but like the menstrual years is like this kind of like initiation into like the real deal. Like, once you get there to like menopausal years, like that's when you, like, that's when shit starts to happen for you. Like, you get super creative and you're, like, birthing all these things. But I was like, that's really incredible. And I feel that to be so true. But at the same time, like, I don't know anybody doing that. Like, I actually don't see that anywhere happening. But it's a good, I guess that's why we're talking about it. I mean, minus you, like, you're out of this. That I know in real life is what I'm trying to say. But, yeah, it's so important, like, we have so much potential.
Yeah, I think it was a podcast that I'd listened to recently, and then I spoke to you about it, Chloe, where they're like, like postmenopausal women are the most undertapped resource in our society, because they have come from this situation where most women have had like a whole career, then they've gone into motherhood and they've juggled motherhood and a career, and now they're out of motherhood and like they've got like the energy, the resources, the wisdom, like all of this incredible information and just ability, and they're completely like, it's like in society it's like postmenopausal women are just like, oh, you were a mom, okay. Like, but
I get what you're saying.
You think about, like, I mean, being a mom, what are we juggling? Like, what, like, the mental gymnastics my brain does every freaking day just to keep this household running in some kind of smooth capacity. Yeah. And do a podcast. I'm like, man, like, when I don't have to look after soon five children, like, that is, yeah, you know, you just saw. So a lot of sex, can I tell you now, like, if we manage time for that now, back, you know, give me a little bit of time and have no children around. Whoo.
Yeah, I feel like when my son reached a certain age, that's when things like really elevated in my business and creative life, because yeah, that is part of you. They are creative projects, children, you know, at their best, like, that we're putting this energy into and shaping them. And but yeah, when they start to create more of their own independence, then we can pull more of that energy back into ourselves and our lives. And yeah, agreed. I mean, this has been, you know, the last, like, what's it been for me now, like 10 plus years have been immensely creative and really focused and really sourcing from that energy. And, you know, I loved being a mom, and part of me even misses, you know, that part of my life, like, now that my son's grown up. But I also fall in love with my creative projects, and they're like, you know, babies of sorts. It's just a different kind of, you know, mothering and nurturing and creativity.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh, well, Kim, I feel like our time is up. I wanted to go into more pelvic health stuff and I guess your current courses. So I think you're currently running the Kung Fu Vagina course.
Yes, we're in the middle
of vaginal kung fu.
Yes, we're in the middle of vaginal kung fu right now. And then my Coming Together for Couples salon starts in May. And then my other really signature salon for women, How to Be a Well-Fucked Woman, Live the Meme, is in the summer, well, American summer. So winter for you guys, like July, August or so. And then my salon for men, Sexual Mastery for Men, which is like this the equivalent to How to Be a Well-Fucked Woman, How to Be a Well-Fucked Man, runs in about September. And then I have a holistic pregnancy and ecstatic birth salon called Sexy Mama because, you know, I really wanted to create a forum for all of these ideas and apply them from beginning to end, right? Like we said, from like preconception through pregnancy to birth and postpartum, from a really holistic perspective, but also a sexual one, right? Is how do we also keep the sexual relationship thriving through all of those areas and also be real renegade alternative mamas and papas at the same time.
Oh, it's so brilliant. And if people want to find you, where's the best place?
KimAnami.com is my website. And I have a podcast at Orgasmic Enlightenment. And then you can also find me at Kim Anami on Instagram. I have a YouTube channel. I'm not as active on there anymore. And one of these days we'll get a TikTok that doesn't get banned and I'll have one of those too. Four times counting, it's been deleted. So. We don't even know. I think the first one, like it went totally viral. Like it was on their search explore page, massive following immediately. And then because we were featuring vaginal weightlifting, even though it's like we weren't even, it's like a health practice, right? And they took it down, I think, because it was talking about like putting something in a vagina, even though it was for exercising a vagina. It's like hard to know even the, because they're never that clear about it and you have to kind of guess and it's really on a whim they can decide. But yeah, so we're eventually, I guess, we'll get back there and figure it out. It's a little boring, so it's really nice to be able to come on to a podcast and a forum like this where all topics are open and we can go in all these different directions freely. It's a great pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
It's been so wonderful. Thank you, Kim. Goodbye, everyone.
Thanks for tuning in to the Road to Wisdom podcast. To join the journey, you can follow us on Instagram at theroadtowisdom.podcast and at www.theroadtowisdompodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. We look forward to seeing you next week with more juicy content.